From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of November 2010. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, actually away from the office today, recording this program yesterday on Tuesday morning with Ag Economist Daryl Good from the U of I. He'll be here for a good portion of the program talking about the report that was released on Tuesday morning. Thank you, Daryl, for taking the time to spend with us. Why don't you go back through the numbers for us very quickly and recap what USDA had to say yesterday?
Well, I think the major focus was on the corn and the soybean markets. And in the case of corn, USDA did lower their forecast of average yield by a bushel and a half to 154.3 bushels. That was pretty much as the market expected. I think they were looking for that number to come down. On the supply side, so that reduces the crop about 114 million bushels compared to last month. On the consumption side, USDA did increase their projection of ethanol use of corn by 100 million bushels, offset by 100 million bushel decline in expected feed and residual use, and then the projection of exports was lowered 50 million bushels, I think because of the recent slow pace of sales. A net effect that the projection of year-ending stocks did come down modestly from last month, now projected at 827 million bushels, which would be the smallest since 1995-96. USDA raised their projection of marketing year average price. The midpoint of that range is now $5.20, which obviously would be a record high by more than a dollar a bushel. On soybeans, the yield forecast was lowered a half a bushel per acre to 43.9. Based on the average trade guess, they were looking for a slightly higher number compared to the October forecast, so leaning a little bit in the wrong direction on that number. So that brings the production number down 40, 45 million bushels, something to that neighborhood. And as expected, USDA did increase its forecast of soybean exports for the current marketing year by 50 million bushels, again, just because of the torrid pace of purchases by China, puts year-ending stock projection now at 185 million bushels. I think that's 80 million smaller than last month's projection. So really tightened the balance sheet on soybeans in this report.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. You can visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. More with Ag Economist Daryl Good when we return here on IPM.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Mike Carey in Morris at 815-941-2189. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Here's something of interest from the University of Illinois.
In response to the recent infestation of the emerald ash borer to trees in East Central Illinois, U of I entomologist Jim Appleby is offering a 4-page colored leaflet that can help homeowners identify the pest and the D-shaped holes it leaves when it exits an infested tree. The leaflet includes extensive close-up photos that help people know what to look for. The 4-page full-color leaflet includes photos of the insect and the damage it can do to a tree to help people identify the pest. The publication is called How to Diagnose, Detect, and Search for Infestations of the Emerald Ash Borer. It can be purchased for $2 each. Call 217-333-2770 for information on how you can order the leaflets. Appleby said that because of the emerald ash borer beetle, some areas of Illinois are quarantined. He stressed that the best way to prevent the beetle from spreading to new locations is to avoid transporting firewood. And that's something of interest from the University of Illinois.
Something of Interest is a public service of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Of course, I'm not in the office. On my way, hopefully I have arrived about this point in Kansas City at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. We'll talk to you from there tomorrow and Friday. One quick note, because we're at NAFB and pre-recording the programs this week, the settlement prices will not be available in the Closing Market Report. We're talking today, actually yesterday, Tuesday, at the time of this recording, with ag economist Daryl Good from the University of Illinois about the reports that USDA released on Tuesday morning at 7:30, the crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimate. Of all the numbers that came out, which one changed that you didn't expect? I suppose it could be the bean production number, but possibly others.
I think all of the numbers for corn and soybeans were within the range of expectations on my part. Perhaps the increase in ethanol consumption of 100 million bushels was a little more than I expected to see in this report. I thought they might wait, but the truth is we've started the marketing year producing ethanol at a torrid pace. We're running about 18% above the average of the September-October a year ago, so I think USDA was kind of forced to raise the projection for the year. If we look beyond just the U.S. numbers, we also did see a sizable increase in the projected size of the South American soybean harvest for 2011. I was not expecting to see that in this report, being that it's so early in the growing season down there.
It was what, up 2.5 million metric tons total, is that right?
That's right. I think Argentina up 2 million tons, which is almost 75 million bushels, and Brazil up 500,000 tons, 20 million bushels. So.
Let's go back to the corn for just a bit and go through those numbers. You mentioned that the ethanol production figure, or usage figure, had been increased by 100 million bushels, that to 4.8 billion bushels. Does USDA, and I don't know whether you know the answer to this question or not, look out when it makes this projection, for instance, at the 45 cent a gallon tax that will come off? And so that credit that goes to the blender will come off January 1st, and unless the lame duck session puts it in place, that's coming off January 1st. And do you know whether they really calculate this in, or do they say, as of today, this is the pace?
You know, I don't know the answer precisely. My guess is that they don't speculate on change in policy, that they would make projections based on current policy, which includes a 45 cent VTEC, but that policy also, we know, expires on December 31. So the projection of 4.8 billion bushels of corn use for ethanol would result in ethanol production well above the mandated level. And there is some question at current prices of ethanol versus gasoline whether that pace would slow down substantially without the tax credit. I think it would, because the blending margins would be negative if the VTEC went away today. And so it would be hard to imagine that blenders would blend more than they have to under the mandate with negative margins for doing so. So it's an unknown on my part what they assumed on a policy side, but I would guess they would assume at this point a continuation of the tax credit and would make revisions later on if that tax credit is not renewed.
VTEC stands for Variable Ethanol Excise Tax Credit. It's the blender's tax credit. Oftentimes people remember it mostly as 54 cents a gallon, but it's now 45 cents a gallon, and that's what the change was on January 1st of 2010. On January 1 of 2011, that tax credit to the blender expires. And so there may be something that happens between now and then in the lame duck session to take care of that. You wrote about it in your weekly Outlook letter. Any more that we need to discuss on this than what we've already taken up?
No, I think, it's a complete unknown at this point, but because ethanol prices have moved above gasoline prices, The blender's tax credit is now much more important than it has been in recent months when ethanol was priced below gasoline, which implied that we would blend ethanol without the tax credit because it would be profitable to do so. That's no longer the case today. And so I think the tax credit takes on a lot more importance.
Other numbers from WASDE, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates put out by the World Agricultural Outlook Board, offset the 100 million increase in ethanol.
It did. feed and residual use, that projection declined 100 million. I didn't read the report. They usually indicate why they made the change. I would assume it's twofold. One, more production of distiller's grain as a result of more corn use for ethanol. And secondly, with the higher corn prices now being experienced, I think they would probably factor in lower feeding rates for corn in the livestock industry. So they dropped that 100 million bushels. So the net change really came from the export market, then a decline of 50 million bushels.
You think that's an accurate assessment, 50 million bushels? Because generally you will tell us that exports are exports and they don't move very much from throughout the year.
Yeah, I think what they're reacting to is that we are seeing in the last three reporting weeks very small export sales of corn. And I think the implication is that the higher prices have slowed export interest to some extent. And now that prices are continuing to work higher, that those higher prices will result in smaller than previously projected exports. 50 million bushels is not a huge change, I think it is consistent with our recent pattern of revealed demand for corn exports.
And then they moved raised the midpoint, and I think, I don't recall, but did they raise it a dime on both ends for corn on the average cash price for the year?
I think 20 cents.
20 cents.
Yeah, yes.
So they raised. Do you agree with that?
I think the real question, remembering what they're forecasting, is the average price that farmers will get when they sell their crops. And that's very much a function of not only what the price level is, but when farmers decide to sell. And so to me, the big question is how much corn was already sold pre-harvest before the price rally really began. I mean, if there was a significant amount sold at much lower prices, it'll be harder to average $5.20. If that percentage was relatively small, then means we're marketing a higher percentage at the now higher prices, which would raise the average price received. So to my knowledge, there's no public source of information on how much has been forward priced. We won't really know that until the marketing year is over.
Turn your attention to the soybean market. They dropped the soybean production figure. By how much?
Well, the yield came down half a bushel per acre. I don't recall offhand what the projection of harvested acres is, 75 million or so. So the number came down in the neighborhood of 30 to 35 million bushels.
Anything else in the soybean numbers that you found of interest besides that one figure?
Well, I mean, I think, again, the export number, USDA bumped that 50 million bushels, which is a big month-to-month change and reflects the fact that we have been selling and shipping soybeans at a very rapid pace. And they did increase the projection of Chinese imports of soybeans from all sources by 2 million tons. So the Chinese demand is strong and expected to continue.
Unlike corn, where you suggested that 50 million bushels isn't that big of a change, 50 million bushels in the soybean market is a pretty good chunk of soybeans.
That's a much larger percentage of our consumption of soybeans than 50 million bushels on corn. So it is a bigger shift.
You think producers, analysts should get bullish the bean market because of this report for any reason?
Well, it certainly changed the projection of year-ending stocks significantly, makes the much tighter situation going into the 2011 harvest. And I would guess that some would argue maybe those stock numbers could be even lower if these export numbers continue to surprise on the high side. And the bottom line is that that may change our analysis about how many acres of soybeans we need to plant here in the U.S. in 2011. If you've got a carryover of 250, 260 million bushels, it may suggest you don't need a much increase in soybean acreage, if any. But if that starts creeping down towards 150 million bushels or so, then I think the market's going to start saying, hey, not only do we need more corn acres next year, we may need a few more soybean acres to be planted. In that arena, then I think when we see the September or the January report of winter wheat seedings and see how much soft red winter wheat was planted and where, will give us some feeling of how much increase in double crop acreage might be available for soybeans in 2011. If that's a pretty big number, then maybe we can get all the beans we need from double crop. We won't have to attract additional single crop acreage.
So the important part is we're not at 150 for carryover yet. So
no, we're not. But so that number
that we could creep there, and if we get there, then that's when the acreage battle really in your mind takes place. But right now, we're not at that point.
And of course, the other part of that is how does the South American crop really turn out next March, April? I mean, the USDA is projecting a big crop, not as big as this year's record production, but still big. Whether that happens or not, we've got a lot of weather to go down there.
Can we go through pricing now for corn and beans both? And since we're on beans, let's stay with the soybean. Producers have harvested. They've got their beans in storage or sold, one of the two. For the beans that they don't have sold at this point, what should we do?
Well, we always talk about selling in increments, and I think what we saw yesterday, at least, was a very large price reaction to the USDA report that pushed soybean prices well above the projected average for the year. In my mind, that kind of reaction to this report is a selling opportunity. Now, whether that was a one-day spike up or whether it persists, either way, I think now is the time to sell more soybeans, old crop, and maybe a few new crop as well.
It might remind you that we're actually recording this on Tuesday and not Wednesday, and it's actually Tuesday morning. About 9:50. So the only thing that we've actually seen was the open, and we had a 68-cent jump on the open, dropped back to 50 cents, and beyond that, you and I aren't really aware where the marketplace had gone. Nonetheless, you say the market jumped, and even if it didn't stay, that it's a selling opportunity.
I believe it is, yes.
And how far sold would you want to be?
Well, there's never a right answer to that question, I think, but I think, you know, at the price levels we're looking at and the yield levels that many farmers experienced this year, that combination of revenue is awfully big. And so I think we ought to be pretty aggressive on soybeans. Probably, you know, 60% of the crop would not be unreasonable to have sold at this point.
If you've sold crop, are you wanting to replace it in any form?
I'm not a fan of replacement, no.
I didn't think you were. I knew that. I just needed you to say it.
It gives you an opportunity to make two mistakes, I think.
Two wrongs don't make a right. Well, so if you're wrong, you're only wrong once. How about that? Okay. On the corn market, what now?
Yeah, I've similar response, I think. I mean, corn prices are moving, depending on which cash market you're in, we're moving up towards $5.80, you know, in spitting distance of that $6 cash price that many people have been talking about. I think that's, again, a real opportunity to be marketing old crop corn and probably starting new crop as well. I know those prices are not quite as high, but we're looking at cash bids probably well over $5 out of the field next fall. It's hard to imagine that that's not an attractive sale to a lot of folks.
Are you willing to do the same with soybeans or to wait on new crop soybean sales?
You know, I'm interested in selling some new crop soybeans as well. You know, it's always a question of what percentage. It's awfully early. A lot of information yet to come to the market that could push prices substantially in either direction. So I think you have to be cautious. We don't want to get too aggressive. I don't think it's too early to sell 10%, 15% of next year's crop.
Do you need to have much of your input priced out at this point in order to pull that kind of trigger?
Well, I think on corn, we're a little more vulnerable on the, if you haven't already bought and applied your fertilizer or anhydrous, we're a little more vulnerable on the cost side. So I think if you haven't done that and you have an opportunity to say, you know, I can lock in this price level that appears to be profitable at these cost expectations, then locking in part of that cost would be a good idea.
This might be a good point to go back and remind producers of what happened in 2008. When they couldn't make forward prices into the next year, into 2009, so it would be 2010, 2011 this time around. The marketplace spikes higher, margins get too large, elevators stop making bids on the way out. How does that take place?
Well, we did see some of that in 2008, that they just said no bids available. I don't think that's happening yet this year, and would not expect it to happen unless we get much higher price levels. But what I think there is a tendency to do is that the new crop bids will be a bit on the weak side, that if you calculate the bases of those new crop bids, they may appear to be pretty weak compared to what we experienced this year. And that's one way that those that are buying a year in advance can manage some of the risk of margin calls and capital needs is to try to take a little more margin in the basis.
And finally, at the CME Group, when markets break loose, and I'm not suggesting that they will, but when they break loose and they run fast to the top side, who's left in the market? Is it just the speculators really that are driving that final spike up and then the quick drop back, and is that the reason it moves so quickly?
Yeah, I would guess that would be the biggest influence, that you wouldn't expect that hedgers are changing their positions rapidly, that they tend to be position holders more than in and out of the market. So the fluctuation would probably have to come from those who are in and out of the market.
So it's okay just to ignore that part of the marketplace and when you're thinking about, well, I price my corn.
Yeah, at this point, if you've priced your corn, it's priced in my mind, and you kind of live with that decision.
Darrell, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. It is a Tuesday when we recorded this at about 5 to 10 minutes till 10 o'clock at this point. Of course, it's a Wednesday afternoon when you're listening to the Closing Market Report. Again, Darrell Good, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure, Todd.
Darrell Good is an ag economist at the University of Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. You can hear us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's National Vanilla Cupcake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1683, Robert Morrison died. A Scottish botanist, his work helped lead to the modern system of plant classification. In 1793, Jared Kitlan was born. A physician, naturalist, botanist, and teacher, he is credited with developing 26 varieties of cherries and 6 varieties of pears. In 1871, journalist Henry Morton Stanley found missing explorer Dr. David Livingston. Dr. Livingston, I presume? Livingston was in Africa in the hopes of ending the slave trade to the eastern coast of the U.S. and to discover the source of the Nile River. In 1951, as of this day in history, you could call from North Carolina and buy tractor parts at a dealer in California without operator assistance. Coast-to-coast direct dialing began. The very first call went from Englewood, New Jersey to Alameda, California. They were able to talk just 18 seconds after the dialing. Previously, coast-to-coast calls were replaced by long-distance operators. And in 1983, computer viruses became a reality. Fred Cohen created the first documented computer virus while studying for a PhD at the University of Southern California. Cohen hid his virus inside a graphics program called VD, written for a VAX minicomputer. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Please do visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our programming content, and you can listen to it anytime you like, or you can sign up to have it delivered to your computer automatically as a podcast. By now, you know that I'm not actually in the office. I'm traveling and hopefully have arrived in Kansas City at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. It means for you that, well, there's no weather segment this afternoon, but I do have some updated nitrogen recommendations for you from Fabian Fernandez. He's the Extension Soil Fertility Specialist here on campus and says that nitrogen application recommendations from the U of I were updated last year. And while I know that many of you have looked at them and that most of you have already finished applying your nitrogen for the fall, it doesn't hurt to have a reminder from time to time of what those recommendations are and, at this point, how they've been updated. You know, most farmers throughout the upper Midwest have started or already completed nitrogen application for this fall. Fall applied nitrogen goes on in the form of anhydrous ammonium, and in Illinois that should happen only in the upper two-thirds of the state after November 1st. That's one of a few new updated recommendations from the University of Illinois, says Extension Soil Fertility Specialist Fabian Fernandez.
The recommendations changed in the fact that we used to recommend, or it was okay to apply nitrogen with a nitrogen inhibitor or a nitrification inhibitor when temperatures were 60 degrees, which is typically the second to third week of October, depending where you are in Illinois, north to central Illinois.
Fall nitrogen applications are not recommended below Route 16 in the state of Illinois. Again, the new recommendations say no earlier than November the 1st, and even then, not until the 4-inch soil temperature reaches a stable 50 degrees. The addition of a nitrification inhibitor doesn't change this rule.
By changing that recommendation, we are not saying you should not use the inhibitor. We are saying wait until temperatures are 50 and, if possible, use the inhibitor, because the inhibitor, it is a good idea to use the inhibitor. It will protect that nitrogen longer from getting nitrified by the bacteria.
There are a couple of keys to fall applying nitrogen. Timing is the first, and it's tricky trying to wait long enough for temperatures to cool down, but not so long that the late fall rains or freezing temperatures arrive. The other is to apply anhydrous to the right soil types. Fall applications should not be made to low organic matter soils, poorly drained soils, or sandy soils.
Every time you apply nitrogen, long before the plant is going to use it, you increase the window of opportunity for that nitrogen to be lost or for something to happen to that nitrogen that won't be available to the plant the next year.
There are some soils and geographic locations in Illinois where it's just not possible to gain any advantage from fall application of nitrogen. The economic gain in other parts of the state make it a better recommendation, but even then, that has pulled back as the cost of N has moved higher. pulled back on the calendar, that is, to no earlier than November 1st. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.